Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe Rimmer, and today I'm joined by Theo Squires. How are we, Theo?
Enjoying the international break, as always.
As always. And Sean Bradbury, how are you, Sean?
Very well, yeah. Tactically booked a week off for the international break.
So yeah. I never book international break off, and I need to sort of get onto that. But
that's the first thing you look for, the birthdays, Christmas.
Yeah.
And international break booked off.
Definitely.
First. Booking it up already.
First rule, by the way, the Blood Red Podcast from now on is no taking your shoes off. because we had an incident in the last pod where Ian Doyle took his shoes off during the pod, several times. So I don't want any shoes taken off in this podcast. Keep them shoes on. Yeah, keep them Reebok Classics on, Sean. Right, well, I thought today, because we're obviously mid-international break, not a great deal to talk about. Saying that, Liverpool players doing well during the international break. A lot of goals going in for Nunes, Diaz, Salah. Several of them for Salah. Szoboszlai with a good performance. So, not a bad international break so far for Liverpool, is it, Theo?
I wasn't expecting you to ask.
No. Well, you know what? I've got a plan, but I've already gone off script to talk about the international break. But I thought it's worth saying, isn't it?
It's certainly seemingly going better than Man City's when all their players seem to be getting struck down by injury. But they're just carrying on what they're doing. Club form, weren't they? Like, we've seen Salah scoring goals, we've seen Nuno scoring goals, Diaz as well. But it's always good to see. You'd much rather them putting in good performance and scoring goals than coming down with injuries. Hopefully, touch wood, they can stay free in the second games and then keep it going until that trip to the Etihad next week.
Yeah, but we were laughing, Sean, weren't we, earlier, saying all of Man City's players are, in inverted commas, injured. Liverpool's are scoring and look healthy, but by the time we get through to next Saturday, it'll probably be the other way around.
Yeah, I think there'll be like 11 City players on the pitch and then they're all pulling masks off like Scooby-Doo villains, and it'll be De Bruyne, Haaland, Stones, all as fit as they've ever been. Yeah,
Sean Gota.
Gota, why not?
Meanwhile,
get him up there.
Darwin Nunes' flight will be landing in Manchester Airport 10 minutes before kickoff. anyway, I thought rather than talk about international football, we'll go through sort of the best, worst, biggest surprises, all these moments of the season. So we'll start off with moments of the season so far. Theo, we'll start with you. What is yours?
Let's go with Newcastle away. Nunes coming on and winning it for Liverpool. Like, that was the moment where actually this side have got something about them now. They're not going to be scarred by last year. It's still very early on for some of these youngsters or some of the new signings. But when you've got that adversity against a side that is in the Champions League, they're supposed to be this big, rich club that are going to take your place in the top four and be the big contenders, to go and wrestle the points back like that. And it was so really well taken goals, weren't they, from Nunes, for him to come on. It's like the start of his Liverpool career, or the second season, that was just a moment I think hopefully is going to be iconic when we look back at it. Come May is such a decisive moment that even now it's one you can definitely enjoy as one of the better victories of Jurgen Klopp's era.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that wholeheartedly. I think, as you say, going into the season, decent draw at Chelsea. They obviously beat Bournemouth at home, but then after the red card, going a goal down, it felt like, maybe a continuation of last season. But then for it to be Nunes as well, it all felt right, didn't it? And it felt like a marker against the team, that a lot of people had tipped. There's a couple of people actually tipping for the title, which I found pretty bizarre.
Stuart Pearce still thinks they will.
He was on the radio about 2 weeks ago saying he's still backing them to win it, which I find utterly bizarre.
How many points so far are they now?
I don't know, but they certainly got a job on their hands to get into the top four. But Sean, will you challenge that moment?
Well, I think you lads have got the correct answer, so that would be my serious answer. But the only other one I'd throw in, and I'll stay on the Darwin theme, but the moment I have enjoyed the most, in the sense of it just made me laugh, was the moment of 3-1 up against Toulouse when, you all know what happens next. He's kind of does brilliantly, goes through, hits the post, and then kind of collapses on the field, crestfallen, and has a bit of an emotional breakdown. Meanwhile, Gravenberch is tapping in. I genuinely have not had a kind of 30-second spell at Anfield this season where I've just thought, this is brilliant, like, this is pure entertainment. You know, it was like both sides of Darwin, something that's amazing. And then, you know, that little bit where it still needs a bit of refinement and where to hit the absolute top level, you just put those away. But it just kind of made me laugh. And afterwards, you had people doing the Nunes chant, some taking the mic and some kind of doing it supportively because he missed the chance. And yeah, for me, that just summed him up and partly summed the season up so far. But
you in the crowd for that one?
I was in the crowd for that one, yeah, me and my dad. Just
so were you taking the mic or supporting him?
I refrained from the chant because I was just too busy laughing.
Was Dave Brad? The more importantly, was Dave Brad taking the pee?
No, he's...
I didn't get that.
He's very supportive of Darwin. He had an arm around the shoulder, Nunes fan. So.
Could the Blood Red Pod get a little video of Dave Brad doing the Darwin chant?
I think if he's won this season, if Nunes has a decisive contribution at Wembley or Dublin, I'll open talks.
Yeah, it's the voice notes that we used to get in the WhatsApp group from your dad.
Yeah, another big season and he'll step up.
Just so the listeners know, Dave Brad, Sean's dad, once did a lovely rendition of LA for you, didn't he? Which you sent over.
Pitch perfect.
Yeah, one of my favourite moments of probably like the title winning season that was, I think. Yeah.
So is this your favourite moment?
One moment that we probably should say that none of us have said, and I think if it was a winner, we all may have said it, but Lewis Diaz scoring after returning to the team at Luton, Theo, probably feels like one that we should give a mention to.
Yeah, it was like a testament to him, like to overcome all the adversity he had, to be able to actually get on that pitch when he hadn't been sleeping. Obviously, he's so worried about his parents. He's been told not to go back to Colombia because he's a security risk. I know there'd been the messaging at that point that they are going to release him, but he still hadn't been released. It was still uncertain there. And you just can't fathom what was going through his mind. So to go on and get that goal, I'm sure it was similar for him in Colombia last night, was it, where he's getting a couple of goals and now he knows his dad's safe, he's celebrating with his people. But yeah, it's just a credit to him how he's managed to come through all this and just put it all behind him. It's great to see that it ended positively for the family. I think there are reports saying that the Diaz family are going to come over now, aren't they, after the international break. So that's going to be a great scene as well. We think next time they're playing at Anfield, if they're there watching. But yeah, it's just, like I said, credit to Diaz, the fact that he could go in and get that iconic moment.
Definitely. Well, we've gone with moments, so these often sort of cross the lines, but goal, just the goal itself, perhaps. Sean, go on.
This is difficult because I think there have been some great individual goals.
They're all counter-attacks, aren't they?
There's a lot of counter-attacks, but then there's been a few kind of foot-like attraction engine, Adam Partridge commentary-style ones, obviously Szoboszlai. I really thought the Jota one against the one we've just seen against Brentford, where he kind of literally scored the goal that is in
it. He scored about three times, hasn't he?
Puts inside, and yeah, that was a really good one. But I'm going to go back to the answer that you guys gave for the last one, and I just think joint first place, both those Nunes goals, because they were the ones for me where I thought he has the ability now to kind of keep a cool head, and if you find him in the right areas and use him in the correct way, and he can finish like that, then, you know, On an individual level and on a team level, I thought those goals in that game, you know, kind of meant so much. So, yeah, two prizes for Darwin. Yeah.
Are we just reviewing Darwin Nunes' season now rather than Liverpool?
Well, just to follow up on that, it was just so important for him, wasn't it? You know, as you say, for the team as well. But it felt it could be a transformative moment and suddenly Darwin Nunes believes he belongs.
Absolutely.
I'm asking you that question.
No, you said it better.
Elaborate.
I fundamentally agree.
Yeah. Theo, goal of the season so far?
I quite like the Jota ones against Toulouse, which were basically the same goal, wasn't it? Each time he's done all that individual run, but it's got to be Szoboszlai versus Leicester.
Yeah.
Like that, the excitement of it being a new signing, doing that in front of the Kop, it was foot like a traction engine. And that's when like your eyes are open to what a talent he was. It's something that we haven't seen from too many players since Gerrard left. Like I know you've got Fabinho scored one against City. I think Ox has obviously got one against Man City as well. But for Szoboszlai to do it, it's like, hello, we've got an exciting one here.
And in the world's greatest cup competition as well.
That too,
on the grandest stage of them all.
You could lead us to
third round,
Wembley soon.
The third round's often the best round as well, I say, at the League Cup. Just when you start on that journey, it's really exciting. You know what? It's not my goal of the season. I'd probably agree with both of you there. I love Nunes' second at Newcastle, even though I've used it for moments, is also such a great goal, and then that Szoboszlai one. But I thought the first goal they scored the season against Chelsea, the ball out from McAllister to Salah, another brilliant ball through to Diaz, and getting that goal, I thought was just a really incredible goal. And you know, obviously they almost went two up, didn't they, there, but for the offside flag.
There's been so many good moves like that. You can say even the one at the weekend, Salah's first one. Yeah. You got Matip winning it in midfield, the pass from Trent and the layoff from Nunes. That's probably something else we should say for a moment of the season. Matip, when he got booked, the little breakdown he had there. Yeah, but yeah, like there's so many of the goals they've scored have been this back to front counter attack, and it's all these smooth passing moves, and they're not as eye catching when you until you break them down. Like you can see a Szoboszlai goal, even Szoboszlai's against Villa or the other Thunderbolts, and you go, wow, that's a stunner. But then when you watch the replay, see how many passes have gone to it, the movement, that's what this Liverpool team is very good at. And when it's early days for the new signings and the fact that it has just clicked, it's really exciting to see.
Yeah, I said this at the time about the Diaz one, but I'll repub this. I'll say it again. But like that, what I really liked about that was it felt a bit like a Mane goal. You know, the way he's rather than him doing something magical on the outside of the area and cutting in or whatever, it's him arriving at the right time in the right area. And you know, I think that's been a little bit of a quiet hallmark of his this season. And even as Theo referenced, the two international goals he just scored for Colombia. Both headers, and I know there's, but to be fair, there have been a couple of Diaz headers for Liverpool. I think having that really brave one was it against Brighton, and
was that when he got his head taken off?
Yeah. Was that a header? Can't remember. But you know,
he just got plump. Clobbered.
His head was involved. but yeah, I think if the more he can become partly like a Mane and retain his Diaz qualities, that's, you know, it's, I think that's the story of all the attackers, isn't it? It's Salah's having arguably his best season since his first one, maybe 21-22 as well, when you know there was just an abundance of goals and assists. But Jota's looking a more complete player. Nunes is, and so is Diaz, which is just remarkable. Yeah.
Poor Cody.
Cody, well, yeah, I think I'm going to be giving Cody a mention shortly. So yeah, we won't forget him.
Yeah, we'll bring up Cody in a bit. But I think that the great thing about all the five of those players, and include Gakpo in this, is that they complement each other as well, don't they? They've done well to build an attack like Salah, Mane, Diaz. That feeds off each other, that seems to feed off each other's qualities, which is great. So, but we've been positive. So the worst moment of the season so far, Sean, we'll start with you.
Oh, it's quite difficult, this. The obvious one would be Spurs, but I'm actually not going to choose that. And I don't want to dig an individual out, but for me, it was not going 3-1 up at Brighton and then failing to kind of convert that game and being pegged back.
So you're digging out Gravenberch?
Well, yeah. But like, I just thought like that week, it then focused those two games back to back, you know, but coming into it, I thought Liverpool get 4 points from this week.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic return and, you know, momentum's really there. They can drive on for the rest of the season. Then given the circumstances of what happened to Spurs, it put so much on the Brighton game. And even then a win would have felt like not quite two victories, but, you know, kind of moral victory or a moral draw in the Spurs game, and then 3 points against Brighton. So that, I think, to be fair, Liverpool have reacted pretty well since then. But because of the madness of Spurs and, you know, the fact that Liverpool didn't play badly, it was just circumstances that were, you know, unprecedented, something that was taken out of their hands. The Brighton one, when again, I don't think Liverpool were brilliant on the day, the draw probably was a fair result. That for me was an opportunity to kind of seal a statement win and get a victory that perhaps, you know, was slightly unmerited, but would have been so massive.
Yeah, sure. Theo, sorry.
I'd go for Tottenham. Like, it's one where you can break down so many moments in that game that you're just not happy with, from the two red cards, the goal that should have been, and even just the manner of their winner and the celebrations afterwards. It was very bitter to be witnessing it, like Spurs celebrating like they've won the league, and we've all seen the loving that they've had until the last couple of weeks. But you can't avoid the fact that if the goal isn't incorrectly chalked off, Liverpool have an extra point. Liverpool a level at the top of the table with Man City going into this game against Man City at the Etihad after the break. And when we've had a team that have lost the Premier League titles by a point twice, and one of them was a goal line clearance, those small margins really matter. Yeah. And it could be something that is very costly come the end of the season. Granted, as Doyley said on a few podcasts, you don't expect Liverpool to go all the way to the last day of the season and be challenging for the title again. But what if they are? What if that is the moment that costs them? And it was just one where they've played so well, they defended really well, they didn't deserve to get nothing from that game, even though it was nine men and everything. And it's just, it shouldn't have happened. It was an embarrassment from the officials. We've covered this so many times. There have been so many dodgy officiating decisions this year across the Premier League, across European football. But when it's one that they've got the decision right and you've still not got it your way, that is the worst moment.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, like Sean, I kind of don't look back. It was really frustrating at the time, but I don't look back at Tottenham with as much frustration because I thought they played so, so well. Yeah. It was so unlucky. They defended. I did think it was really funny the other night when Tottenham getting beat 4-1 at home to Chelsea, and people are like, brilliant defending from Tottenham. Look at the way they're on the halfway line, allowing Chelsea to run through on goal time and time again, and just about missed before they won 4-1. And Tottenham got a lot of credit when I thought Liverpool showed how you play with nine men, which was dig in, put your bodies on the line, defend heroically. And yeah, they got very, very unlucky at the end. But I thought Matip in particular and Van Dijk that day were defended so well. It was so cruel. But I would actually say Luton's opener, because I just felt so frustrated because
it was deflating, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was deflating, and that was sort of what we'd witnessed last season a lot. Again, going away to a promoted team and not really doing the business. Again, missing big chances, and it, you know, Nunes being a big part of that in the first half. So when they took the lead, it just, you started getting the feeling they might get one here, and then when they did. Yeah, that to me was just so frustrating. And obviously, they got a point out of Liverpool, but, you know, it still felt like a big 2 points dropped.
I'll tell you something, though. Having to pick this worst moment, it's made you realise how different this season already is to last year. Yeah. Like, there isn't really much to choose from. And we're looking at games like Luton, like Brighton, like even Tottenham.
Yeah.
That was a missed opportunity. If you don't do this mistake for the Brighton opener, for the Luton opener, then you get more points. Yeah. Then you're clear at the top of the table. Or you just level with City, and it's like, well, if you're saying this now, how exciting is it going to be for this team when they are months down the line, years down the line, they're in the peaks? But that's what you wanted to see. You wanted to see them bounce back from last year, and they're certainly doing that. Yet it still feels like there's something holding them back.
Yeah.
Don't have that holding midfielder who's world-class, guaranteed to start. So it's quite nice to be on City's coattails without being that complete package.
There's not been really a really bad performance this season. To lose away is probably the worst, but I mean, mitigating circumstances and the fact that they changed the team, they're sort of already cruising through the group. But in general, I mean, Chelsea 1-1, I look at that as a missed opportunity, and they
everyone else seems to banter them, don't they?
Yeah, and they certainly came into it late in the game, didn't they? And they had chances. Obviously, we talked about Spurs, Luton. All right, you know, I think a draw was a fair result, but Liverpool had chances early doors, so there hasn't been a performance. Even Brighton, like you say, a chance to go 3-1 up.
Definitely, and I'd say, you know, my choice of Brighton was more based on feeling and the fact that it came after Spurs.
Yeah.
It's like, in isolation, I think a draw at Brighton this away this season, you know, most teams would take that, apart from, you know, maybe City, a couple of other challenges at the top. But like you lads have said, we're not quite scratching around to find bad moments, because obviously, you know, there have been some, but they are literally the only ones you could choose from. And like, you know, the Europa League game, okay, it was a defeat, it was unfortunate, but, you know, Liverpool really rallied, could have perhaps had a legitimate, in many people's eyes, equaliser at the end. And there's a pattern. I remember Andrew Beasley put a tweet out after that game of, like, at this point of European seasons, it's often like the fourth game where there might be a little bit of a dip. So I wonder whether that's something that's kind of almost just baked into the way Klopp constructs seasons and what they do in training. So, yeah, I just think you have to kind of nitpick to find bad moments, really.
Yeah,
you know, it's been so positive, as Theo said.
Yeah. Okay, so back to positive player of the season so far. Theo, we'll start with you.
There's been a few, isn't there? It's got to be one of the forwards, I reckon. Mo Salah. Can't look past him with the number of goals he's scoring, number of assists. There are so many players that are playing well. Like Van Dijk seems like he's back to his best. Szoboszlai's been exciting. Nunes is doing so well. But Salah is the Egyptian king for a reason.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Theo's pretty much nailed it there. I think this is... not going to quite say exposes the fallacy of the whole Liverpool 2.0 narrative from Klopp, but like I would go in this order: Salah, Van Dijk, Alisson. I just think, like, as well as the new lads have done, and, you know, Szoboszlai obviously has blown us all away, hasn't he? Gravenberch, very impressive, very progressive and impressive player. McAllister, I think history will judge this season very well for McAllister, and, you know, maybe there's bits we can talk about on him shortly, but actually think the big boys have really stepped up and kind of carried the team. And when you've got a goalie, a centre-half and captain, and, you know, the best player at Liverpool, arguably one of the best players, if not the best player in the world on current form, doing what he does, and Mo Salah, anything is possible, isn't it? And that goes back to what Theo just said, where I don't think you can rule anything out for Liverpool this season now. Like, you know, whether it's top four in a trophy or two, or even a title challenge, if those three keep playing as well as they are and supported by all the others.
Yeah, it's funny with Alisson, because you're saying your top three, I'll say mine, but I wouldn't have Alisson in there. But just because I don't think he's done anything extraordinary, but that is still because his level is that high that he always does it, doesn't he? And to be fair to Alisson, you know, Salah's probably had a dip in his time at Liverpool. Van Dijk's had a dip. Has Alisson ever really had a dip?
For personal reasons, in the pandemic, But then he came back and scored a winner against West Brom. The Champions League.
He said that like goalkeeper. Yeah, he came back and scored the winner. Well, my top three would probably be Van Dijk, I think, has been, you know, as good as, well, maybe not as good as, because when he started, but almost back to his very best. He's not far off.
Yeah, so I'd seen a stat the other day where he's winning something like 80% of his head this season. Yeah. And it's like, if he maintains that, it's like freaking nature stuff, which is what he was when he, you know, right?
He's got his pace back as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's got his pace back, in terms of he'll never be as pacey as he was 4 or 5 years ago, because that's natural. I'm not as quick as I was when I was 28. But I think he's adapted differently. I almost think, like, I look at him now and he plays a little bit, a higher standard. And I love Sami Epi as a player, but I'm looking at him the way Sami Epi played, and he's adapted his game, and he wins so many headers. He sort of leads that defence so well. But I think he's just been superb this season. He's been a great captain. I think he's just been supreme. And when he's playing, other areas click, don't they, as well? So, he's been brilliant. Salah, definitely second. I'd throw Nunes in third. Despite the misses. We've probably seen more comedy Nunes misses this season. You know, I'm thinking Toulouse, I'm thinking West Ham before he scored.
Was it Villa where he had the header at the far post? It was open goal and he put it wide of the cup.
Was it? Yeah.
He's had a few.
And there was one against Union, like 6-yard box against Union. And then I'm thinking, and Luton as well. There was a couple of misses against Luton.
Oh God, yeah.
So you're thinking already, it was up to almost five comedy Nunes misses. But there's been so many great moments from him. And he sort of encapsulated this sort of bright, newer team, you know, it's the effort he puts in, the work rate. And then I thought Klopp's quotes about him after the Brentford game the other day, even though he didn't score again, very unlucky not to with the two ruled out, but in the way he led the line so well, he linked up with Salah so well, and it wasn't all about scoring a goal, it was about being a part of a team performance. And I think he keeps growing, and that's really, really exciting. And I'd put Nunes in my top three.
I think that's a very fair shout, especially when, you know, the partnership between him and Salah could potentially become, if, you know, things go well, they both stick around and Liverpool kick on, like, one of the great attacking partnerships. You know, it's really got, you know, there's still time, and every time they play together and find each other in the right areas, it just looks so dangerous. But I agree with you on Nunes, and the idea of the kind of thing last season of, he's an agent of chaos. I think he now creates chaos, but in a much more ordered and structured way. He is more part of the team. And that, we know, when Diaz first arrived and he had that 6 months where there wasn't always end product, but he just ran teams ragged, and his output just in terms of work and pressing. I think Nunes has got a bit of that. And it was as Klopp said, you know, he will be one of my first names on the team sheet when he learns the art of defending from the front. And I think, like, in a more simplified way, because of the likes of Szoboszlai behind him, it's a little bit easier for him to do that now. Like, he's not having to do a Firmino impression, is he? It's very, very different, but it's very, very effective.
What I like about him as well is there's been so many times in Liverpool's Premier League history where they've gone and signed that target man, going, it's not quite happened the year before, or they've just missed out on the title and they need a few more goals. Let's go and get a plan B.
Yeah.
Whether it's like an Andy Carroll, Benteke, that sort of forward. And then Liverpool play them and go, yeah, they don't suit us at all. Why have we spent all this money on them? Nunes is the mixture of that plan B, causes the chaos, is that threat in the air, but he's got the pace and as well, the power. Yeah. He's like when you face Drogba at his peak, and Liverpool always hated facing Drogba because he always scored, always big moments in Champions League games or decisive Premier League games. Well, Liverpool have now got that sort of player. And if you think back to Drogba early on, he was getting a lot of stick for handballs or diving, for not scoring enough goals, missing. And while it wasn't the same attention to it because it wasn't as big on social media or anything, he wasn't this comical figure. When he exploded, it was 30, 40 goal seasons, ends up winning them the Champions League, and he's a big legend. Nunes is even younger than, I think, when Drogba went to Chelsea. So if he can have a sort of impact there, 10 years at Liverpool, he is that successor to Salah in the attack of getting all these goals. He just makes football fun. Yeah, you like watching him. It doesn't matter when he misses against Toulouse because it's enjoyable.
But it doesn't matter so much because you know he'll arrive again. You know, I know with Nunes, if he does miss something, chances are 2-3 minutes later, he'd be back trying to get on the end of something. And, you know, that one time when he collapsed to the floor and ironically Liverpool scored a second later was the one time that you've seen him show real emotion about missing one. So, he does make football fun. I think that's a really good point. And I think sometimes in this quest to sort of challenge teams as almost as perfect as Man City, you shouldn't forget that football should be fun. The League Cup's fun. That's why we're going to talk about it.
No VAR, that's why.
I don't want to go off a Drogba tangent, by the way, but Drogba, what a player. No. The thought, just, he scared the life out of me.
Well, scared that for me, and one of the only players I can remember, like, giving Hippie an absolute torrent at Anfield. Yeah. Well, like,
you get both centre-halves.
The one that I remember is the one where he turns Carragher at Stamford Bridge and just leathers it.
Yeah. But before that, when they played Marseille in the Europa League or the UEFA Cup then, he absolutely destroyed them. And I remember at the time thinking, God, he's good. And then he went to Chelsea. Probably, I don't want to say worst player, underperformer of the year so far, or the season so far.
Tsimikas has been disappointing. I know he's come back strong in that last game with a couple of assists. But even Klopp himself said the difference between him before that and after the first assist. You wanted him when he had this opportunity to grab it with both hands. And maybe he's a player that just takes a few games to get up to the level. Yeah. And you're hoping he can come in stronger now. But it hadn't been the best start of the season for him. McAllister seems like he's getting worse. There's more attention on him each week in that holding midfield role. And while the stats are backing him up for in terms of winning it and everything, he's still a little bit slow. Endo, I suppose he's one shout as well, just couldn't see enough of him. I'm going to throw Thiago in as well. Like, he was a player that could have left in the summer. He was supposed to be fit for the start of the season, and we just haven't seen him. Yeah. We're not going to see him until 2024. He's out of contract in 6 months. He's one of the highest earners. Like, this midfield has been put together for the future. He doesn't seem to be part of that future, and it's while he could come in, make a big impact second half of the season. This wait for him now has just gone on and on and on. Yeah. He's not started a game since February. And we've said on podcast before, it's frustrating for him. But when you know how good he can be, not having him there for another injury, it's very frustrating.
And I think to add to that frustration, he probably would have been the six, wouldn't he? You know, like they probably would have played him, certainly. And I certainly think he's more natural at it than McAllister. Sean?
Yeah, I think the Tsimikas point is an interesting one. And I agree with Theo that he's bounced back a little bit. And okay, there have been errors that have cost Liverpool, but not in any meaningful way yet. I think he's the obvious candidate, but I also feel a little bit for him. And, you know, there were questions last season around not necessarily Robertson's kind of form. I think he dealt okay with the change of system, but people, even on this pod, we were saying, well, if it's going to be a three and a two at the back, you know, you want, like City do with, you know, Bakanji or whoever, you want more of a centre-half, a left-sided centre-half. And Robertson kind of got to grips with it a little bit and I think played really well this season before his unfortunate injury. But I kind of think Tsimikas is probably going through that process a little bit now, isn't he? Where in actual competitive games, he's having to adapt a little bit to it. So I'll give him a little bit of a pass and agree with everything else you've said. You know, Thiago, there's no way you can't see that as just a bit disappointing, albeit, you know, not necessarily his fault. But Gakpo, I wouldn't say it's a disappointment. I agree with your point before, Joe, that he has still contributed and, like, you know, having five players of that quality is Liverpool's strongest hand this season, isn't it? It's what could blast them to success. But a couple of times, a couple of moments, I've kind of thought, is he now a slightly a player between positions? Like, you know, there was a lot of talk last season, and I thought this myself, where it was like, as a false nine who is comfortable going out wide, he's almost got something more than Firmino could offer. But then with the way the team's adapted and changed and the way that the kind of eights, you know, whoever it is, Jones or whoever, and Szoboszlai on the other side, the way it's much more attacking, it's kind of pushed more, you know, up the pitch even further, trying to squeeze teams. I just think, like, and as we said about Nunes, you kind of need an out-and-out number nine almost in that team now. It's much less of a false nine. And then obviously the other place we've seen Gakpo is, as he was against Brentford, I think, wasn't he, on in midfield? And I'm not totally sold on that yet. It just feels like he's got a bit more adapting to do. So I think it's almost like, maybe I've summed it up as he took a big step forward last season and did well when he arrived. After a little bit of a period of acclimatization, maybe it is just taking a step back and being very much the fifth man in that unit for now. But that certainly doesn't mean, even this season, he'll probably get a run of 10, 12 games where he scores 6 or 7 at some point, and, you know, we'll say very different things about it.
I'm going to throw a name in there who we haven't mentioned on this podcast, and we haven't mentioned much this season at all, and that's Trent. And I don't think he's been bad, but I think, again, you talk about a player between positions.
Yeah,
I feel like last season, moving Trent into this hybrid role sort of turbocharged and gave Liverpool the boost that they needed to kick on and turn their form around. And that was brilliant. And we sort of expected them to build on that this season. And they've almost have done. And Trent's continued playing in that position, but almost without Trent being a big part of it. Whereas last season, it really seemed to get him ticking again. This year, I feel like I'm not seeing the best of him there, and I'm not seeing the best of him at right back either. So I just wonder what the future holds for Trent positionally. Obviously, he's going to be a big part of whatever Liverpool do, but whether his form hasn't been bad. That's the thing. You know, I don't think you could pick on him and say he's been poor. I just don't think he's been the star of the show. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe Trent just needs to come out the limelight a little bit, because last season, for better or worse, we were talking about him. This year, we don't seem to have talked about him a great deal. But, you know, I know Klopp mentioned the other day, someone asked whether he could move into that position. And he sort of said, oh, we'll still lose the best right back in the world if we do that. But I don't really feel like we're seeing Trent as the best right back in the world anymore, nor are we seeing him be really influential in that middle position. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to just see them experiment with Trent in the middle of the park once or twice, just to scratch that itch.
I'm going to see it at the weekend, because I know how much you love those England games.
Yeah. Well, I won't personally see it because I won't watch. So, yeah,
I will say about Trent is he is having to adapt, because it isn't just that you are now in midfield when you're going inverted. Mm. Like, there have been times when he stays out wide. There have been times when he has to drop to centre-back. Like, you can say when they're adjusting this system, it doesn't seem as fragile defensively this year as last year.
Yeah,
there isn't as much of where is the right-back supposed to be, where is the right centre-back supposed to be. And that was a step in the direction. But if you break down his performances, he's not getting the assists he was. Like, you're missing him being out wide and whipping in those crosses. But he's getting a lot of those pre-assists. Yeah. Like, he got the one for the Salah first goal, didn't he, when he's whipping that through ball through the line into the middle, and then Nunes has got the assist, but that comes because of Trent's vision.
Yeah, true.
He is the one.
That was a great pass as well, wasn't it?
And he's done a few like that. Like, he was unlucky not to actually get an assist against Luton. I think it was when Nunes hit the bar in the first half.
Yeah.
He's still having an impact in midfield. It's just in a different role now. Yeah. He is not the one who's the number 10 from right back. He's just quietly going about his business. Yeah. And because we've seen him get 15 assists in a season, put in a few screamers from the edge of the box, you want to see that as well.
Yeah.
Liverpool have had to adapt, and whether there's a way of complementing both or this is new Liverpool, we'll wait and see. Like, it changes when they've got the next Fabinho and holding midfield, whether that's Pasetic when he's grown up a little bit and developed and he's free of injury, or they sign someone else, or Endo's just steps up, or McAllister can do it. Maybe Trent does it himself, but it's still year one for Liverpool. They are learning to grow into a team together going forward, and they will still a few more pieces they need to put in this puzzle.
Maybe that we're not talking about him as much, I think, is probably a good thing for Trent right now.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Youngster, who's impressed you most, youngster word?
It's got to be Jarrell Quanta, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it very much feels like his breakthrough. And I think the thing that's impressed me about him, it's a little bit unfair to make this comparison because obviously it's different positions, but sometimes when a youngster breaks through, and I'd say Curtis Jones is the most obvious example of this, they come through and you still think their mentality, not even the mentality, their kind of what is ingrained in them to do as a player is still big fish in small pond. And, you know, when Curtis still came through, it was like he wanted a lot of the ball. You know, the criticism of him, which I think he's done a lot to kind of debunk now, is that he held onto the ball for too long. It felt like he was like, give me the ball and I will try and do something. because that was probably what he was used to, as being the best young player. Whereas with Quonset, okay, very different position as a centre half. You're not going to be like, give me the ball and I'll try and, you know, create an attack necessarily. But it just feels like he's ingrained in what it is to be a Liverpool centre back, and to have that as a youngster, that attitude of, you know, I will go out on the pitch and try and do to the best of my ability what Van Dijk or Konate or Matip does or Gomez in their absence, I think is incredible, really. And it's still very early days. Like he himself said, I think he's only played 9 games or so for Liverpool, hasn't he? And you know, that's not his end goal. He's got ambitions beyond that in a chat Theo and others have with him this week, which is great. And I'd encourage everyone to seek that out and read it, because it gives a measure of the man behind the player, or the young man behind the player. But I think so much is there, you know, already as a young centre half. And like, you know, like someone like Elliot, obviously he looks at Salah and tries to mould his game on this, you know, hero who he's playing with and is also a teammate. I just think you can see it with Quonsa that he's trying to do that with Van Dijk, and why not? You know, he could be good enough.
Quonsa?
Yeah, it's got to be Quonsa. Look, it was around this time last year when the World Cup was coming on. We went out and we spoke to a few of the Liverpool Academy players out on loan, and you could tell they were all young kids. Like, they're not giving you the best answers. Yeah. They're still very sheepish, and you think you need to do some growing up.
You're interviewing them.
You need to mature a bit as a player, don't you? You need to get that experience. Whereas speaking to Quonsa this week, he was just leaps ahead of what you'd expect him to do. He was showing maturity beyond his years. There were really measured answers, and he was just showing how much effort he's put in behind the scenes to get here, whether it's going off his own back to ask for clips of Van Dijk and Liverpool defence to study that, watching South American defences, watching Spanish defences, Italian defences. He just came across really well and really likeable.
The answers are really good. Obviously, we would say this, but I would say go away and read that interview yesterday. So intelligent, wasn't it? And so mature.
The confidence there that without the right tone would come across as arrogance. But you hear him going, I want to be one of the best in the world. And you don't thinking, you're a bit risky saying that. You're thinking, you know what? You probably could be. Like, you give it a chance here. Like, he's got all the attributes you need for a centre-back in terms of he's massive. He's really good on the ball. He's good in the air. He's quick. Like, that's what you need. I'm not going to say he's going to be another Van Dijk, but you can see why he's come into this Liverpool first team and he doesn't look out of place. Like, they wanted a centre-back in the summer. They didn't get one. And you're not going there. We're really short in defence. Like, we've seen a few young centre-backs come through, whether it's Phillips, Williams, Kometio, and they're lacking something, whether it's pace, ability on the ball, just raw and make mistakes. We've not seen that from Quonsa yet. He said in this piece as well, I will make mistakes at some point, but they don't define me. Everyone makes mistakes. Show me someone who has never made a mistake. And he just seems to take it all on his chest, takes it and moves on, and he's like really relaxed. And you're just excited to see what comes next. Like, something else I'll say on him, when a centre-back comes through into a first team, when they're that young, they're normally playing right-back. Or they're playing midfield. Like, it's the famous Carragher quote, isn't it? You're either a full failed centre back or you're a failed winger. You don't go in straight away and start in your preferred position because it's a risk to play you at centre back. Same for centre midfielders. You play him somewhere else because you don't want to put a kid there. But the fact that he's come in and he's rising to it, whether it's Newcastle, they were 1-0 down when he came on with 10 men.
Yeah.
And he's part of that. They get to win.
Yeah.
Wolves starting. And he's had other games as well where he's came on and he's making an impact. And you're just excited to see what comes next for him, because Matip's out of contract next summer, 32. Van Dijk's 32 as well, out of contract the year after. Might expect the captain to get a new contract, but you wouldn't be surprised to see Matip go on. Konate's got his injury issues. Gomez is out with an injury at the moment as well. Quonsa could be turned to more and more here. And when he's had this really good loan with Bristol Rovers, and you're looking at these young players, what they do the first half of the season, you think maybe get a loan in January. You don't want him to get a loan at all. You want him to stay part of this team, keep getting opportunities. Because if he keeps this up as a 20-year-old, he could be first choice within 4 or 5 years.
I'd say sooner than that, you know, if he keeps this up. I mean, the most impressive thing about Quonsa, and by the way, clean sweep, I would say Quonsa as well, is his passing. I think his passing.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a lot of players, Nat Phillips came in, and, you know, in terms of aerial and tackling and blocks, the sort of bread and butter of the centre-half, you couldn't really knock him, you know, pace, positional passing, perhaps they were the elements that you might look at, but Quonsa's passing is just levels above what you see from a lot of young centre halves. And you know, I really like the pace he puts on the ball, the types of passes he plays. Like you said, Sean, playing like an elite Liverpool centre half, or certainly trying to mimic that style. And yeah, with a centre half, I think as well. They just need time, don't they? You know, nine good games isn't anywhere near enough to know whether this lad is really going to kick on. But it's certainly been nine very good games, and very exciting as well. Considering I don't think we probably would have expected too much of him this season. And on that, quickly now, because I think we're starting to run out of time, I've got a few more questions for our surprise of the season.
Oh, surprise, let's throw Grantzer in there as well.
Yeah.
I know you just said that, but...
I've got an answer. Can I give my answer?
Okay.
Never mind yours.
Well, I'm sure.
Joe Gomez, I was going to say surprise of the season. Yeah. I sort of had Joe Gomez as his Liverpool career kind of winded down. You know, in the summer, I wasn't really sure whether he'd stay, and I wasn't really expecting much of him this season. But wherever he's played, and he's played pretty much all over the back four, he's stepped into midfield, copying Trent. Perhaps not as accomplished there as Trent is, but he's not Liverpool down. He's been very good. He's put in some of his best form. He's almost scored a goal, which yeah, I mean, it's something for him. And I think has sort of reminded us why he could have quite a long future at Liverpool. The one other question mark that I would always had hanging over him across his time at Liverpool was fitness. And I know he's suffered an injury now, so hopefully it is just a one and back. And hopefully that doesn't linger on. But yeah, I think he's been very good.
What I liked about him was, I think it was last pre-season when Doyle spoke to him and he pointed out, I'm still younger than Van Dijk was when Van Dijk joined Liverpool. And I'm not sure if that's still the case or if he's now the same age.
Yeah.
But when you think that, you know, hang on, we've still got 5-6 good years of Van Dijk here, and you wouldn't be surprised to get another couple of years out of him. If Gomez can go on that similar pattern, then it doesn't matter that he's a few up and down years. Like, centre-backs take time to settle. Like, think of Carragher when he first came through in the 90s. He was playing all over the place, gets a little bit of a revival under Houllier, but it's at fullback. It's only when Benitez comes in and he gets put centre-back later on, when he's got that bit more maturity, that he becomes...
I think he would have been about 25, 26 when he got moved to centre-back.
So like, it does take a bit of time with centre-backs. And for Gomez to come back, he's had so many setbacks in his career with injury. He's a player you want to take those steps to be able to put them behind him and show why Liverpool wanted him so far and stuck with him for so long. He's not as tall as the others. He doesn't seem as dominant, not as nasty as in terms of a centre-back. But he's showing a bit more leadership this season, showing that he is just wanting to make up for lost time. It's something you want to see him build on, it because if Trent, we have this conversation of, can he go into midfield? If he does, Gomez is a very good right-back option. He's proven that this season.
Yeah.
And you want to see him silence his doubters.
Yeah, Sean?
You know what? You've surprised me with your surprise answer. I think Gomez is a great answer.
So does that mean I'm the surprise?
You're the surprise, yeah. Mine would be a touch more obvious, but I think it still counts. And it's to Szoboszlai, because I just think, obviously, is it that much of a surprise when he was the most expensive summer signing, wasn't he? You know, given how much it was to meet his release clause. But I think to step in and effectively replace the captain, that's broadly where he's been in terms of his position, and be such a physical and technical upgrade on Henderson. And, you know, I mean, when I see him strolling around the ball, he's not strolling, he's always tearing around the pitch. You know, he's got speed and stamina and skill, you know, which is just a remarkable combination. But
three S's.
Yeah. The one I kind of will say to my dad at the match sometimes, and, you know, I don't mind saying it, it reminds me of like Bale, in the sense of he just seems like somehow he is a physical level above virtually everyone else who's on the pitch. And, you know, people have made the Gerrard comparisons, that's obvious. You know, when he scores screamers as well, he carries on making that case. But just the fact that he looks so good so quickly, and to go back to a point you guys were saying before about Trent and the change Liverpool made last season, that not only recharged player but just lit the spark, didn't it, for what was like an improved run into the season. I had almost certainly not written off 4-3-3 in any way, but I just thought, well, surely Liverpool will build on that experiment quite heavily, and you know that will be the blueprint. You know, you'll see a lot more of that for the start of a game and when they're in possession. But I almost wonder whether Szoboszlai has turned the tables on that a little bit, almost single-handedly, because he's just, as a power-packed kind of right-sided person to be in a midfield three, I think he's already showing glimpses of potential to offer more than Henderson ever did in that role. Not to denigrate a great player who obviously left in a way that none of us were impressed by, but I think it's legitimate to say that already about Szoboszlai. So, yeah, I think it's him. And I do think one slight concern I'd have with him this season is just the amount of minutes and exposure he get. Because I think in the Premier League already, he's played more minutes than anyone apart from Alisson. You know, he played in every game and must
have more than Salah.
Yeah, it's literally almost all the minutes. I think he's only not played like 24 minutes or something of games in the Prem, that is. So there's going to be a lot of load on him, and obviously he's such a big player for his country. I think Liverpool will have to be careful with him, but the sky is the limit, and that has surprised me that it feels like that so soon.
Quickly then, best and worst opposition teams this season.
No one really stands out either way. Come back to me.
Sure.
This is a tricky one. I did think a lot of Brighton. I think I'd probably say Brighton, but you know, my answer may well shortly change when Liverpool go and play City. In terms of best, worst, it's a difficult one, that.
Everton.
I kind of admired what Everton tried to do.
Our producer's just locked up.
No one really stands out as a worst yet, because even like, you know,
I think that says a lot about Liverpool this season, doesn't it? I don't feel like they've played anyone that you think, you know, like they breezed past Aston Villa, but Aston Villa have been very good throughout the season, so you couldn't really say Aston Villa.
Like Toulouse, putting five past Toulouse, but they didn't play badly. Yeah. They go and beat them in the return game.
Well, even Wolves, you know, at the time, I thought Liverpool sort of wiped the floor with them in the second half, but again, they've done all right this season, and Man City lost there. You know, they've proven tricky. You know, Brentford, same. So, you know, it is hard to pick a best and worst, and I haven't even got my own. So,
the best one will be Man City, you'd imagine.
Oh yeah.
That's going to be the test of Liverpool. If they can go and get a win there, when they rarely win at the Etihad, like, you know, they are serious this year. Otherwise, it's just another year where City walk away. But there hasn't been a team that you think, God, they were awful. Obviously, Liverpool haven't played Manchester United yet, and that'll come in December. So I'm sure that could soon be the answer, because it seems to be every time in the recent years. But yeah, like, it's just been pretty much routine for most of the victories.
They obviously weren't the worst too, but I do look at Tottenham and Newcastle and the way they played against depleted Liverpool teams in terms of the red cards, and I wasn't very impressed with either of them.
Yeah.
And I think for what they're aspiring to be, and even though Tottenham had a brilliant start to the season, I think that if Liverpool go down to 10 men next weekend against Man City, they would absolutely... You know,
we saw that in 2017-18? Is that 5-0 with 10 men?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And you know, I won't name names, but you can work it out. But one reporter said at half-time of the Newcastle game, it was most likely be a cricket score. And I think good teams, I can understand, but against Newcastle... And they didn't impress at all, really. They didn't seem to have that extra class to then make Liverpool really pay. And the same goes for Tottenham, so... I wouldn't say they're best and worst, I wouldn't say they're the worst, but I would say...
They're not as good as they think they
are. Yeah, I wasn't impressed by them. I sort of agree that they haven't really played anyone that sort of falls into either category just yet. Okay, Sean, just one for you. Biggest traitor of the season so far.
Traitor of the season?
I don't think we'd have that type of discussion
on the podcast like this, a family show.
right, we'll finish off then with asking both of you to make one big prediction for the rest of the season. It doesn't have to be Liverpool. It can just be from what you've seen so far of the whole Premier League.
I'll double down on the Spurs Ange loving unravelling and say they don't finish top four and Liverpool win Carabao and Europa double. And right the wrongs of Klopp's first season.
Wow. Let's go for something similar. Liverpool go all the way with City, win a couple of trophies.
Yeah. I was going to say the same about Tottenham. I think they'll finish sixth or seventh and they will have a really bad run at one point and they will drop them out.
It feels like that could come now. And you know what? If they respond to the setbacks that have just happened and regroup, fair play to them. Yeah. That's a sign that they really could be in for a good ride. But I just feel like, basically expanding on what you've just said, the rate that they've had to go and how exhausting it's kind of been, as much as it's been exciting for them, just to stay at pace with City, who are depleted, and Liverpool, who have clearly got room for improvement, and Arsenal and others, is, you know, I think that's quite telling.
Yeah. So what I'll say about Spurs and Arsenal is that they think they're challenges. You can throw Newcastle in it as well, but when they have injuries, the wheels come off a little bit, whereas City... As we mentioned at the start of the podcast, there are only a few injuries. Guardiola's mentioned that earlier in the season. Liverpool have obviously got a lot of injuries, but you don't see it really stopping them. Like, yeah, Liverpool getting a bit close to the bone in terms of how many youngsters on the bench, but there's still enough there to get them over the line. They've got the experience, they've got the quality. Whereas Tottenham have got so many absent at the moment. And if they're out for a couple of months, even a few weeks, they don't have the squad, do they?
Yeah. Newcastle's a funny one because I think teams like Man United and Chelsea, because Chelsea had such an erratic start, and they seem to be getting themselves together a bit more now. But and United again, they're just having a great Man United crisis season, aren't they? I mean, they are overshadowed. The Newcastle have been bang average, really. Yeah. You know, there's been obviously a couple of big wins. European nights, I think, coming back has been something they've really enjoyed. But in terms of their league form, I think nowhere near. I don't know why people get so carried away, Stuart Pearce, why you would tip them for the title. I'll never know. You know, I think there's a process going on there, and I think Newcastle will be a force to be reckoned with in the years to come. And I think Eddie Howe's done a brilliant job and will continue to do so. But I think there was always going to be a dip.
I'd be more worried about them if they had Unai Emery as manager, or if they had some of the players that Villa got. Villa look better than Newcastle.
I think Eddie Howe's a very good manager. I just think that I would have been stunned if they'd stayed in the Champions League places. Mm. And I think sixth isn't, they shouldn't see that as a bad season. But the standards they've set. But yeah, other big prediction, just copying yours, Sean, is Dublin.
Dublin. Hopeful or more bothered about Dublin than Wembley for the Carabao?
You know, I love the Carabao. You know, that's hard. But yeah, Dublin this year, just it's the one trophy Klopp hasn't won. And I do, because I like underdogs, I like second string competition, so I always like the Europa League. It's a great league.
I won it for Aldo more than anyone. When he did his column a few weeks back, he was reflecting on the idea, the possibility of it, he seemed very enthused.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that the Champions League final is Wembley. Oh, we've done Wembley a few times. Could get there again with the cup finals this year. Let's do something a bit different.
Rubbish, Wembley. Yeah, Dublin all the way. Right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Monday to try and think of more international break ideas. If you want to send us any of your moments, goal, worst, best, big
predictions.
Or just
some questions for Monday.
Yeah, some questions. leave us a comment on YouTube or give us a tweet or an X. What do you call it? Do you X people that?
I still say tweet.
I still say tweet. At Joe Rimmer 88, at Theo Squires Echo,
indeed.
At S Brads.
Sean Brad 2.
2. Yeah. 2. Not Sean Brad.
Sean won't reply to you, though.
Right. We will leave it there. Thanks very much, gents, and we'll see you again Monday. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.